Welcome back, everybody, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm Tony Black, your host, and this episode we're covering episode 16 of The X-Files, Young at Heart. And with me is my guest, who is also always very young at heart. It's Andrew Brooker.
Hello, mate.
Are you feeling particularly youthful today? Have you got a spring in your step, Andrew?
Oh, it's, you know, Sunday afternoon and I'm talking X-Files. I am actually in quite a jolly, young at heart kind of mood.
It's what fills you with joy on a Sunday, isn't it? Talking about
absolutely
alien conspiracies, and in this case, weird salamanders.
Yep.
Let's start as we mean to go on then, and discuss Young at Heart. Young at Heart is the 16th episode of the first season of The X-Files. It first aired on February the 11th, 1994, and was written by Scott Kaufer and Chris Carter, directed by Michael Lang. The story sees Mulder, who must stop an elusive stalker named John Barnett, who he captured years ago while working in violent crimes, but who mysteriously seems to not have aged.
You know, all this talk around here about spooky Mulder, I never used to pay much mind. I figured it was just talk about how paranoid you were and all.
And now?
Remember the day you walked into my office wet from Quantico? You pissed me off just looking at you, but then I saw how your mind worked, how you were always three jumps ahead. It was scary, Mulder. Everybody said so.
I've heard the story.
Yeah, well, maybe you ought to hear it again. You let a lot of people down here in the Bureau. They had big plans for you. A lot of people are saying that Spooky Mulder has become an embarrassment, a liability.
What? Are you saying that somebody from the Bureau is behind this?
Maybe, maybe not. It's always best to cover your ass in any event.
Sorry. This was just faxed. It's a copy of John Barnett's last will and testament. No surviving relatives, left what little he had to another prisoner, a Joe Crandall, and instructions for his body to be cremated. His will was executed 6 months after his death, and this document states that his ashes were spread along a bank of the Delaware River by an employee of the crematory used by the prison.
It's like I said, I think somebody's messing with your head.
Killing a sales clerk just to leave me a note? I'd say that's gone a little out of your way.
So, Young at Heart, is this a 10 out of 10, Andrew, or are we going slightly lower?
It's much, much lower than a 10 out of 10, I think. I think I'd be generous and give it a 5.
Wow, okay.
But that would be very generous of me, I think.
Why is it very much square in the middle, then?
It's not a terrible episode by any means. I think the biggest problem it's got is it actually rehashes a lot of stuff that we had a few episodes back in, say, Squeeze.
Right.
Where it was done much, much better.
Yeah, it's very much a case of, it's trying to do, I think this episode, and I would probably give it about a 4.5, roughly. And I think the problem with it is that it's trying to do half a dozen different things. And it doesn't do any of them particularly well. That's the point, really. It's on the one hand trying to be very much a case of Mulder and his nemesis and, you know, having a proper villain of the piece, in inverted commas. But then it also wants to be about strange science, and then it also wants to throw in a conspiracy government angle, and you're thinking, well, it's not one or the other, and the episode decides to veer off and be all those different things whenever it's convenient for the story.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to know what it wants to be.
Yeah, it wants to be the lot, really, and then you kind of feel that half the episode, the first half of the episode, it's on a fairly similar track, but then it got to about halfway through and they went, what do we do now then? What's next? What happens next? And then you get this really fragmented kind of ending, which doesn't really add up to much.
Yeah, the whole weird, bizarre pseudoscience thing just kind of seemed to get thrown in at the halfway mark because they weren't sure how to explain this dude.
It's hard because, you know, it's interesting that Scott Kaufer, who only ever wrote this episode or co-wrote this episode of The X-Files, he was a long-time acquaintance of Chris Carter. And apparently Carter said, as soon as I got the series up and going, he came to me asking to write an episode together, but I would have gone to him anyway. We discussed reverse aging as a concept for an episode, and we stumbled onto the progeria idea, progeria being the disease that we'll talk about later that factors into the science. He wrote a draft, and then I took it and I rewrote it and added some elements, including the salamander hand, which I think has been very, over the years, has been very divisive, the salamander hand, because it's... You see, one thing that all the way through this I kept thinking was, John Barnett is basically Mulder's Joker.
Yeah.
And having given him a salamander hand is basically their way almost of saying, he's like a comic book villain, but we're not a comic book. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it really is.
And even to the point where in the court scene, the flashback, the guy playing the older John Barnett is pretty much a dead ringer for Jack Nicholson.
Oh, yeah, he really is. That kind of... He looks like he's got that crazy look in his face, like Nicholson at the bar in The Shining.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he's got that sort of angular, sort of mischievously devilish face with a balding pate, and you think, well, we know what you're trying to do here. You're trying to tee Barnett up as like an, you know, this is only like 3 or 4 years after Tim Burton's Batman, and I bet they were fans. Do you know what I mean? You really get the feeling that they were just trying to make him this stalkerish. Uber villain menace in Mulder's life, but the whole thing just doesn't hold together because, well, we've never heard of him before. If he was that important, surely Mulder would have been more. Again, it comes down to the problem you had in Lazarus, which, and previous episodes, where they bring in something that's supposed to be quite important to these characters' lives, but there's been no sort of preamble to it.
No,
so it doesn't really mean much, and then conveniently, it's never mentioned again.
Yeah, I think they probably learnt their lessons from this one, though, especially with this kind of. You know, long what is supposed to be a long-term bad guy.
Yeah.
Because obviously, we get characters a little way down the line, people like Alex Krycek, who starts off, he's introduced, and comes back regularly as the series goes on. And I think that's where they've worked out the best way to give us a long-term... And nemesis is a good word, I suppose, but for Mulder, it's just one of those complicated long-term relationships that keeps the story going. This one feels like they've tried to force that into the first 5 minutes of an episode where this guy doesn't actually even appear.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's just odd, and the way they do it just doesn't seem to work, and consequently the episode just doesn't ultimately feel... You know, at times as well, it reminded me of Pusher, which obviously did a lot of this so, so much better. This idea of Mulder having, you know... He very much felt like Mulder's Moriarty. Do you know what I mean? Pusher. And Pusher's my favourite episode of The X-Files, so I will always sing Pusher's praises. But, you know, they really got that sense of a taunting nemesis who really does some fucked up shit really well. Whereas this guy, you don't really get much of that because it's so wrapped up and convoluted in all these other things that... At the end of it, you're just a bit like, oh, just get on with it then. All right, fine. I get the idea. So, yeah, I think we both can agree that we're being generous when we say it's more towards the halfway mark.
It's
probably among the weaker episodes, actually, of season one, which is funny because I remember liking this more when I was younger, and I don't know why.
I think it probably would have been a lower score if it wasn't so close to really bad episodes like Gender Bender. And Jersey Devil, which really kind of put me off. And there is kind of this section, this little bingy section after Ice, where you're binging the series. There's like 4 or 5 quite bad episodes that really, I think if I was watching it now, I think I'd get to about this point and go, I'm not watching this anymore because This is really shit.
I've been saying to Matt Latham, who's been going through, and he came on and did 2 of the earlier episodes with us, but I've been saying to him as he's doing his rewatch, look, with season one, I say it to everybody, season one is really hit and miss. It's really hit and miss. There were some episodes that are great, and there are some that are really shit, but you've got to stick with it, because as soon as you get into season two, it's off at the races, pretty much, and it doesn't put many feet wrong from then on for years. But at the beginning, you're absolutely right. You get one ice, you get a squeeze, then you get a bit of shit, then you get an ice, and then you get a bit of shit, and then you get a beyond the sea, and then you get a bit of shit, and it works all that way through season one, and it these days there's a big question as to whether or not it would even make a season two. I don't think it would, actually.
No, in TV land nowadays, it really wouldn't get a season two. No. Not with this. Well, I think the problem is you'd get to this point, and I think ratings would drop spectacularly. I can't remember what episode's on after Young at Heart.
EBE.
But, oh, the wow, EB is a good one.
Yeah, exactly.
but the problem is, after Lazarus and Young at Heart and Space, and I think you'd get to this point and go, doesn't matter how good EB is or how good, you know, reviews say EB is, I think you'd lose quite a large amount of your viewership at this point. You know, and we're talking, you know, mid-90s, there wasn't that much in the way of spectacular TV.
No, not really.
Certainly not, you know, we get a lot of dross nowadays, but we also get an awful lot of really high quality, like movie level quality TV. So to release a season like this now, you wouldn't survive to the end of season one.
No way. No chance. You know, they treat this like they treat things like Minority Report these days. You know, the season of that, it just dies on its ass. So we're lucky that it came out when it did, really, when people were a bit more forgiving. Young at Heart, then, obviously, going into a bit of depth, begins with a very sort of quick teaser, doesn't it? It's very, very quick. It just introduces the other prisoner, Crandall, who goes and, like, set, like, three or four years ago in the prison where we see Dr. Ridley. He's doing experiments on John Barnett, who's been in prison. You see his severed arm, which is quite a visceral image of his arm, of his hand, I should say, has been chopped off. You know, you've got the beginning of the salamander hand. But I just think, despite the fact that, you know, Mark Snow tries to throw in a few devil sort of things into his music, it doesn't really, and then you see Barnett's coloured eyes, it doesn't really establish what the episode is, does it? A lot of the teasers will give you some, oh, it's a ghost, oh, it's a monster, oh, it's a, you know, an alien ship or whatever. This, oh, it's a guy who has got weird eyes, who's lost a hand. Do you know what I mean?
it could have really done with a bit more explanation as to who this guy was, and then maybe even having the scene that follows the titles, having that before the titles.
Yeah.
Just to try and set the scene a little bit.
Exactly. Or even, you know, what a flashback of Mulder catching him or something, you know, or that scene where you see on the videotape of Mulder not shooting him. You know, imagine if they started it with a really intense sort of chase sequence or whatever, where Mulder's catching this guy and then he shoots him, and then even you cut to the prison and you see that it's the same guy. Otherwise, it's just a bloke on a table. And
yeah, with glassy eyes.
Yeah, with glassy eyes. Okay, fine. You know, I mean, I suppose, you know, Ridley does say that he's dead and then you see his eyes blink, so he's not dead. But that, so, you know, doesn't...
It's even that thing, though, isn't it? Like, when his eyes blink, that should be like this really kind of, oh, shit moment.
Yeah, exactly.
That should make you go cold and go, oh, fucking hell. But it doesn't. It's just a blink.
Yeah. Oh, okay. This guy, you know, I don't know about, who's lost a hand, is alive.
Yeah.
Fine.
You know, I mean, maybe I'm being a bit unfair, but I just went, yeah, okay. And?
Yeah, same. I did exactly the same. You know, and yeah, that's not what you should have done, really. Obviously, now we get to the introduction of Mulder and Scully are called to meet Reggie. Reggie Perdue. I always like Reggie, and it's a real shame we don't see more of Reggie, actually, because he's. Yeah. I don't know if you listened to the episode with Matt Lamborn on for Ghost in the Machine, where we talk about how the old partner of Mulder, Jerry Lamana, is really poorly done, and you don't get any sense that Mulder would give much of a shit about the guy, and he dies. No. Whereas in this case, immediately, I got the sense that these two are old friends and they work together, and the casting's really, really good. Dick Anthony Williams is great. And I really like the character, and I think he works well with Mulder straight away.
Yeah, there's an instant you can tell there's a friendship between the two. They're very kind of, they're very jovial with each other. They're really kind of happy, and almost, even considering the circumstances they're in, they're both happy to see each other.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. I really would have liked him actually to have been one of them again that popped up every couple of episodes, just as, oh yeah, you know, we came across this, and make him a character that we really care about, and if you feel the need, kill him off.
I think without doubt, if you ever get a remake of the X-Files, Reggie will be a much, much more recurring character. Yeah. I think that if Chris Carter could see his time over again, he wouldn't have killed him, because he worked really well, and I think it was taking him out. He's a real shame, and you think, oh shit, I like that guy. So on that one hand, it's good, but on the other hand, it's like, well, there was a lot more you could have done with this dude. You know, you could have had him as a real, really interesting other side of all the conspiracy stuff, where he's not actually a villain, and he's a mentor to Mulder. That would have been cool. You know, you wouldn't have had to put him in the conspiracy episodes necessarily. But like you said, he could have cropped up at various points, and you know, or you could have done more episodes that involve Mulder's violent crimes days and have him refer that. There's just more you could have done, I think.
Well, I mean, Mulder's got such a rich backstory in his time with the FBI, you know, before and during the X-Files.
Mm.
You know, he's going to have all these really cool contacts, and it would be really nice if one of them survived more than one episode.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I tell you who I think would, if you did a remake, I tell you who I think would be good as Reggie. Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, I could see that.
Especially after Hannibal, where he plays Jack Crawford, and he's great in Hannibal.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, bring his old gruff Jack Crawford back.
Yeah, <in Hannibal. laughs> exactly. So obviously, you know, Reggie's introducing him to the fact that there's a note that's turned up in a robbery that's a clue for Mulder. Fox can't guard the chicken coop, which is they immediately go, it's Barnett. Yeah. And Scully's like, who's Barnett? And then you get the backstory. And, you know, the whole stuff about Mulder and his time in violent crimes has not been, it's been something that's been mentioned before, but it's not really been explored properly. So it was good to have that come into it, you know, and have someone pop up from his past and have it pop up that, you know, when he was young and green, he made a mistake when he didn't shoot Barnett and somebody died. And I think if there's one thing that works quite well in this, even though it's a little bit throwaway, it's that Mulder genuinely does feel like he fucked up at that point.
It's a nice little, because it comes up again, obviously, a little bit later on as well. It's, you know, Mulder was working by the book. And it's, you know, it's nice that you've got this part that's affected him quite badly. And, you know, you make of it what you will, but it may or may not have helped contribute to the way he is now, which is very not by the book.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's quite nice to go, you know, he clearly knows that sometimes by the book isn't the right way to go. So let's, you know, what's the opposite of by the book? It's clearly Mulder.
Fly by night, yeah.
Yeah.
Just fly by the seat of your pants. And I thought the same. I was like, well, this does factor in, even if it's retroactively, it factors into the psychology of Mulder taking chances and going against these bosses and things like that, because there was a point where he did do everything to the letter and an agent got killed, you know, and now he goes and watches the kid's son at a ball game, which I thought was a nice little touch, even though it serves up another note that gets onto his windscreen and tees up the fact that Barnett's watching him and things like that. But it's good that he actually does give a shit and he still goes and looks over the family in a way to sort of make sure that they're all right, because he feels the guilt that he didn't do more to save this agent.
Yeah, it was interesting. I think it could have been done a little bit better, especially if we're going to have some form of real backstory for Mulder. I think, you know, and maybe it would have been cheesy. There's no maybe about it, but maybe he should have known the kid, or the kid should have known him, because it wasn't until I watched it for the second time in a couple of days I realised where the focus was going in that football game. You know, so there was no actual, you know, you didn't really care which of those kids it was. It was just a bunch of kids in the park playing football, and he was just a weird dude in a suit that didn't have a dog in that race. I think it could have been done a little bit better. It's not a bad scene at all, but I think it could have been done a little bit better. Up to the cheesiness a little bit for him, but made it so that there was an actual emotional connection between him and the sons.
Or even to the point he's talking to the mother, you know, or something like that. Yeah. The mother's at the game and they're talking about Steve, the guy who died, and he's like, you know, just to something else, just to tether it a bit more. No, I agree, yeah.
Not a bad scene by any means, but...
Yeah, no, I know, yeah. I do always think, though, when Reggie's showing Scully the video... And when they're showing, you know, they're showing Scully the stuff about Barnett, and he's talking about what happened. It does feel a little bit like a Lethal Weapon moment, doesn't it? In a way that
but
it is a bit like that. It's that whole thing that he's not been able to reconcile. But again, it's like with various things. It's like the whole thing about his fear of fire in Fire, which was never mentioned before, and it's never mentioned again. Yet in that whole episode, you're supposed to believe that Mulder's terrified of fire.
Yeah.
And it never works properly, because you retroactively, you also go, well, there's plenty of times when he faces fire later on and he doesn't blink. And then there's times before that where, you know, it's the whole thing of that things are brought in to supposedly have an impact, but better storytelling, they would have maybe tried to layer things in beforehand and they would have thought of stuff. and maybe done a bit more of the backstory. And this is the problem.
Because we've mentioned this a couple of times in the past, haven't we? Where we said, you know, we're back to typical early and mid-90s TV where continuity doesn't seem to be something people worry about.
Yeah.
And because this is before things like, you know, the IMDb forums where everybody would go, well, hold on a minute. You know,
yeah.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, 2 years ago, there was this one scene where he said he doesn't like fire. And now look at him. He's doing circus tricks with Ring of Fire.
Mm.
A lot of it, I do forgive a lot of the X-Files, especially the early episodes, because it was just the way TV was made.
Yeah.
But it is very, very throwaway. Things like the fear of fire seems to be thrown away far too quickly.
It's just the irony is that the X-Files became one of the first TV shows that did hold to continuity in the end with its ongoing storylines and stuff. But at the very beginning, when they're first starting out, there is you're absolutely right. There is a certain, you know, throwaway aspect to some of this stuff, or just bringing things in for convenience. I think the other thing that struck me with this was that, did you find that the scenes with the FBI woman Henderson, who he goes to see about the writing of the notes, did you find them odd? Because there's a proper sort of flirty thing going on there. And that was weird.
It was quite uncomfortable, actually.
Yeah, it was actually.
It was a really weird little... well, a couple of scenes like that, wasn't there? And it was almost work wife-ish. You know, oh, God, no, stop that, please. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right for Mulder's character. I don't care about hers.
No.
But it doesn't feel right for his at all, because that's not the kind of character he is.
He doesn't do that. You know, it's weird. It doesn't work. You know, there's a couple of instances in the early days where there was one episode where there's a woman on his cell, on his answer machine, and she says, "You stood me up, Mulder. You're a schmuck," and all this. And I'm like, well, he wouldn't even ask you out in the first place, would he?
No.
He just watches porn. That's how he gets his sex stuff. He's not interested in relationships. He's too busy, you know. So it's things like that that don't always hold together. And I just thought that was a weirdly uncomfortable scene, definitely. But you see, the rest of the stuff in this first half there is some interesting stuff, like that whole scene where Reggie basically, you know, chews Mulder out and says, you know, you had a promising career, you let it all go, and you had a, you know, you had a, all that is, I just thought to myself, there's so much potential here you could do more with. You could focus the episode more around this, as opposed to just getting it all out of the way so Reggie can die, and then you go off onto everything else. And I just, you know, there was even the bit where Reggie says, you know, be careful of people in the FBI. And Mulder says, why? Do you think people are plotting against me? And he says, well, you never know, basically. And that's it then. And then you go, well, what does that mean? Do you know more?
You definitely need to elaborate on that a bit more, didn't you?
Yeah, does he know more about what's going on? Does he know that? Because at this point, obviously, we start building up to the hint that the X-Files is going to be closed down in tombs and things like that. Does he know more about that? Does he know? Has he heard things? Does he know Skinner, who we haven't seen yet? There's just a lot of things that I'm just going, well, you can't just lob that out there and then kill him off.
It feels like a lot of throwaway pretense for upcoming episodes, doesn't it?
Mm.
Which would be fine if the show had a habit of doing that, if that's what it made it so that it was doing that all the time. But this just seemed like okay. Looking at it now, it can be, you know, a look at what's coming up. But actually, all this is pointless drama.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's not meant. Yeah, you can almost be certain it's not meant to actually infer anything else. It's just for the sake of it. You're absolutely right. This one is just full of things like this. This episode, like the flashback. This is the first time the show has ever does a, and I think the last that it ever does a flashback where you get a character looking to a window and then they remember what happens in the past. And that I don't remember the X-Files ever doing an in episode flashback. They do the ones that are like, you know, set before the teasers, like with the conspiracy, like Smoky Man or whatever in the 50s or whatever. Or, you know what I mean? But I don't remember, unless it's like a memory.
I don't remember, you know, The Truth, which was a 90-minute flashback.
I tell a lie. I think there's one other time, and I think it's in Little Green Men, where Mulder remembers Samantha's abduction. That's possibly the only other time, but... What did you think of this flashback to the trial? I thought it was filling time, actually.
Yeah, it did seem a lot like it was something to just put in before what would have been the adverts on whatever channel it was on then. Just something to give people to talk about while the adverts were on and they were making a cup of coffee. It seemed completely pointless and time filler completely.
A little bit. Worth it only maybe for Mulder's quite angry you know, impassioned speech where I half expected him to go, "You can't handle the truth."
Even his angry speech at this point, I buy that he would do it because obviously he's angry that it's his fault, but I didn't buy the actual speech. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem fit into him, and we've seen him, you know, angry a few times since, but it didn't seem to fit Mulder at all. And obviously, you know, what I think it's supposed to, I don't think, maybe it's not supposed to fit Mulder because it's early, very green Mulder. But I don't know. It wasn't the best scene, I don't think. And yeah, space filler. Suddenly realised when they were writing the script that they only had 35 minutes of TV and a few more.
I really think that was the case here. I really do. I think Chris Carter had to bulk it out. When he said earlier that he rewrote Scott Kafer's script, this went through about 3 or 4 script writers, I think, as well. I think there was a lot of bulking out, definitely. And I think that could account maybe even for the subplot, for the other things that come into this episode halfway through. And I think it could account for the fact they just didn't have enough story with Barnett stalking Mulder. And then they had to do other things. I think I did like the you know, Jack Nicholson Barnett version, the older guy, when he the way he turns around and says, "I'll get you," like that. Yeah. That was good.
That was weirdly dubbed, though.
It was, yeah, it was, wasn't it?
That was clearly that
ADR,
that
didn't come out.
It didn't come out quite as well as it needed to come out when they recorded it, so they put him onto a looping stage to improve it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think they got that quite right.
Maybe he was like too Canadian, the actor. Yeah. So it was more like, "I'll get you."
Yeah.
"I'll get you, buddy." Yeah, could be. Sorry to Canadians listening. I do apologise. I love you and your country. You're lovely people. Sorry. But yeah, you've got you've got the trial sequence. And at the same time, this is the point, because at this point, the plot really isn't going very far, is it really? So far, all you've had is a couple of notes sent to Mulder. We know that John Barnett might be back. Scully's nosing around getting some information about things like, you know, where Barnett's medic, you know, the prison and stuff like that. And she's the only one who's actually getting stuff that can help forward it, because right now we're just going around in circles, aren't we?
Yeah, so, we're just kind of marking time, aren't we? Just,
a little bit.
Again, you know, filling time in the script because they're not sure quite what to do with themselves.
Yeah, yeah. And then you get the phone call from Barnett, which... again, the playing up the nemesis angle, really, when he calls the FBI, which, you know, it's creepy enough, but it's all really just to tee up the whole idea when Mulder says, you know, "We'll prove it," and he says, "I'll prove it to you," and then he kills Reggie. You know, that's the whole reason for that, really, is just to kill Reggie, isn't it? So they can, to give Mulder more...
To elicit an emotional response from Mulder, isn't it?
Yeah, and to make the threat present and current.
Yeah. Which, in fairness, you know, at this point, apart from... him getting angry in the previous episode, we don't see much of an emotional response to anything with Mulder. So there's definitely a reason to do it. I just don't think they've done it very well, or done it to the wrong character.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think, like I say, I think it's a shame Reggie dies. You know, they could have done more with him. Apparently the scene where he's killed, there was going to be a lot more with the salamander hand in it. But all the way through, I just kept thinking, it's just like... I just find it funny.
It is very funny. Well, the problem is, it's not even a good salamander.
No, it's terrible.
And when you see it, like, in the light later, you know, right at the end of the episode, it just looks ghastly. And, you know, not kind of, and we're not talking horror movie awful. We're talking, it just looks shit.
Yeah. Yeah. It really does. Apparently, a lot went into talking about how to design the salamander hand as well. Apparently, they had lunch, Chris Carter and Michael Lang and the prop master, and they had a 2-hour breakfast in which they spent mostly looking at hundreds of amphibious hands in an encyclopedic book about amphibians, which the prop master had brought. Well, the prop master had brought that with him. It's just quite a funny image, really, of them having lunch while looking at this massive book of hands.
The coffee table book of lizards.
But yeah, it's all quite ridiculous, really. So, you know, at this point, Reggie's dead. Mulder is genuinely affected by it. You know, there's some nice moments in there where he's lamenting the fact that, you know, Reggie was doing certain things he never got a chance to show him and stuff, which is good. You know, that relationship's been better established, so I do believe that, even if it's a shame. And now, and this allows at this point for them to get into investigating the prison stuff, and then they, you know, gets them to start on finding out about Dr. Ridley, who is, you know, the guy who was experimenting on. And this is the point where the plot just veers off completely, doesn't it? Because it's right already, it's been a stalker story with a guy who was supposed to be dead who's alive and has got a weird hand, and now it's suddenly right. Okay, medical experiments, progeria, you know, parallels to Nazi scientists, and you're like, well, hang on a minute. Yeah. Where's this come from?
You know, it does make a massive left turn, doesn't it? And it's completely ridiculous to the point where actually at this point you're pulled out of the episode completely and go, well, this is just bollocks.
Yeah,
I can't suspend my disbelief anymore. You're talking out of your arse.
I mean, it's a good job that they at least had Dr. Ridley in the teaser, because if they hadn't done that, then you really would have gone, oh, come on a minute, where's this come from? You know, I think that's the only thing that saves them here. I don't know as well whether having progeria involved is a little bit like one of the things we talked about in the space episode was how it's very insensitive when they try and blame the Challenger disaster in 1986 on an alien space ghost, right?
Yeah.
Which they do, unbelievably. Yeah. And I don't know if using progeria, which is a real-life disease, is a little bit insensitive, and trying to weave it into, ultimately, this really fucking wacky science involving salamander hands, which I still don't understand, right? Even at the end of this.
I think insensitive is probably a really good word for it. I think it's just, it stinks of desperation, actually. It smells of, quick, we need something rare. And literally, someone's Googled rare disease.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is maybe the first entry on the third page. no one will think of this one. We'll do this.
Yeah.
It seems really. Yeah, I don't like it. It seems forced, and you're right, a little bit insensitive.
I know that they do it to suggest that, you know, to make the point that Ridley's a heartless bastard who will happily experiment on children who are dying from old age to do all this. I get that, but again, we get a scene now where it feels like time killing. When Scully is doing her log entry, we haven't seen a log entry for a while, actually. It's been a few episodes. But it ties into the fact that Barnett is wandering around her house and everything. And then Ridley turns up. But that's such a protracted moment where she gets the gun and she's walking through the house and she's, you know, carefully loading the gun. And she's, I felt like saying, well, it's obviously Barnett, isn't it? Or just,
yeah.
It just felt like it dragged. Again, I think they were dragging the scene out in order to fill time.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, maybe because, I watched this twice in the space of a couple of days, but maybe each time I just wasn't paying attention. Do they explain how Barnett got out the house?
All I can assume is that he gets out via a window that's open, because he stalks back into a room.
Yeah.
And I as I was watching it, I thought, well, I'm gonna guess that. That's the only thing I can, because there's no real explanation, no, how he gets in or how he gets out.
But it's not really visited again, and this is the weird thing about it. So instead of doing that, which would have been really easy, I'll go back tomorrow night and do that. You know, we end up with the ending we've got.
Why is he there? Why does he go to Scully? The suggestion is that he's going to kill her. But yeah. I don't understand Barnett's plan at all. We'll get to this in a bit. I don't understand what he's doing, because I don't think the writers do. But that just felt like a reason to put Scully in danger and to add a bit of tension and to go, right, well, let's drag it out a bit. Because when Ridley turns up, it's just like, oh, okay, we're back onto explanations again.
Yeah.
Where's it going? And I said, that's the whole thing. Where's it going? What do you want to do with it all? And now,
this is the problem, though, isn't it? When you get to the point where you have to explain your episode 3 or 4 times in 40 minutes, you've done it wrong.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing with this. And when Ridley's talking to Mulder and Scully and he's explaining everything, you know, what is good is that he's very dispassionate about everything, even his own death, his own impending death, you know, and he's talking about potentially horrible things. But A, what the fuck is it all about with his experiments? Because how do you possibly take a disease that affects, like, children aging and then turn it into managing to replicate a salamander hand on a human? How does that work?
You also need to consider that he wants to experiment on humans on a disease that we're told has only ever had like 100 reportings in history.
In history, yeah.
And yet somehow he's found multiple people to experiment on?
Yeah. How's he done that?
Sadly, this isn't the first and probably won't be the last time we have to pick apart Chris Carter's terrible writing.
God, yeah. I mean, it makes me wonder how much of Scott Cowfer's original draft was this. You know, mate, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see what he first wrote and whether or not it was a straight-up Barnett vengeance kind of thing, as opposed to all this. Because a lot of this all smacks of Carter. A lot of this, you know, this extra stuff of how he manages to try and tie rapid age deceleration into growing appendages. I mean, I have no fucking idea. He put some scientific lines in there and all that, and I was thinking, you're doing credit to you because you're trying to make this work, but I'm thinking, are you serious?
You've gotten to two-thirds through the episode and you're still trying to put it together, and sadly everybody has lost the plot by this point.
Was it me, or did Scully look impressed by him?
Yeah.
I mean,
she kind of had that look on her face, saying, oh, yeah, I never thought of that. You never thought of that.
What, Scully, you didn't think about experimenting on dying children so you could grow a salamander hand? I just was like, well, I thought you would not be impressed by this guy. I don't care if you can go, oh, well, I'm impressed by the scientific developments.
Yeah. No, you're a scientist. You'd get up and beat seven colours of shit out of them.
Yeah, and you're Dana Scully, who is like not just a scientist, but you care about children, you've got morals, you know, you're a bit feminist, everything. It's like, well, no, you wouldn't be. You would not be impressed. Oh my God, no, that's just a really weird beat that I don't know. But now, of course, then Ridley throws in the extra little plot twist. So we've gone fully to the left and now we're going back to the fully right. When he goes, oh yeah, the government know about it. Yeah, I was working for the government. Yeah. And then...
that's 100% Chris Carter.
Yeah. And he's gone, oh, well, we haven't had Deep Throat or any conspiracy for about four or five episodes. Oh, right, let's throw that in, right? Let's get Jerry Hardin on the phone.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm happy for Jerry Hardin to pop in, you know, at any point. He's great. And he gets like one scene, and then he just explains, oh, yeah, the government are basically going to bargain with Barnett for the research. And I'm like, well, hang on a minute. Where has this come from, right? Why... it just felt like they weren't confident enough with the simple story of Barnett and Mulder, and they felt like they had to have all this other stuff in order to make it work, when in reality all it does is make you go, well, what's this about?
I mean, we've had the stalker thing done so many different times and so many different shows, and so much better now. It really feels like a waste of what should be a really good story.
Yeah.
By adding, you know, lizard appendages and old babies.
Yeah, and conspiracies of governments trying to buy back science that could, you know, as they say, change the course of mankind. I'm assuming that the idea would be that they can stop aging or that they can reverse aging. I mean, I don't even know what that science is meant to do, really.
No, there was a brief mention of the Fountain of Youth, wasn't there? But outside of that, there's no actual mention as to why we need this medical breakthrough, you know, because no one wants to be a 75-year-old baby.
Exactly. It's, I mean, you know, the suggestion is that Barnett was not only not killed, but he ended up, you know, growing younger, but he had to basically grow a salamander hand. That was the cost. I can't see it catching on the NHS.
Can I have it on my foot where I can hide it? Into that?
Yeah.
A frog, one frog foot.
Yeah. I just can't see this catching on in like the NHS or in healthcare. Do you know what I mean? No. People go, oh yeah, you can grow up younger. Oh, great. But you've got to have a big fat appendage.
Yeah.
And you've probably got to have it somewhere everyone's going to notice. You just have an entire race of people walking around with a salamander hand. I mean, how weird would that be?
Yeah, the salamander hand would be all right. Imagine being the guy that has to have that weird Komodo dragon thing coming out of your neck. Oh, yeah, I'm living forever. I've got to live with this fucking thing. Looking like a... You know, looking like reptilian Shakespeare.
It's just ridiculous. Just ridiculous. It does at least all build... Obviously, at this point now, you know, they're basically trying to, you know, surround Barnett, and they, you know, you get the confrontation, and you get the location being a concert hall. Now that's quite nice. You know, you don't get that very often in the X-Files. I quite like the grandeur of where it all goes down. But then This is where I don't understand Barnett's plan at all. Because if he wants to, like, make a fortune and get immunity, which is what Deep Throat says, you know, he wants immunity, he wants money, he wants all this for this research, then why is he so bent on going to a concert hall and shooting Scully dead in front of everybody when it's like, what do you want? You know, do you want to, what if you want to just, why doesn't he just make the deal with the government and then kill Mulder and not go through all this? Why don't he just kill Mulder, make his deal and go?
Yeah,
that makes a lot more sense.
But this is kind of my issue with the thing when he's in his house, in Scully's house. So he's hiding from Scully, Mulder and the Doctor because he doesn't want to kill her in front of them. But he's happy to do it in a concert hall in front of a couple of hundred people.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing you can say is that he's psychotic, right? So he's trying to goad Mulder out so he can, you know, do all this grand, you know. And okay, fair enough. He's clearly bonkers and he's clearly a psycho. But he's not enough of he's not dumb enough that he's making a deal with the government, right? He's clearly got a plan beyond this. So why it just felt so forced. It just felt like, so this is obviously just to get us to a point where Mulder can do his take the shot moment, Mulder, you know, his cathartic kind of, you know, then you get that close camera shot of, you know, his face and he goes, and he's like, what are you waiting for? Do it. And then which is just, I just felt like that's what this has all been about, isn't it? Really? Well, that's what it's supposed to have been about, but you haven't quite sold it.
No, well, this is it. It's exactly what it's about, but we just don't care.
Yeah.
You know, we're at the point where we're like, well, that's great. No, the only thing I really care about is the fact that finally this episode is over.
And it's
really sad that we have to have, you know, we're at a point like that in the X-Files, which, you know, apart from these couple of really duff episodes, has a decent season one. There are far too many episodes, and probably because I'm being a bit more critical of them while I'm watching them so we can talk about it on here, but there are far too many of these episodes where I look at and go, this is just crap.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
I mean, obviously, you know, we all know it improves as the years go on to a point, and I'm quite looking forward to getting a couple of years down the line and talking about some of the really good episodes that are coming. But yeah, there seem to be a too high a percentage of duff ones in this first season.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, and you do have to wade through a bit of shit in order to get to the gold, really. And luckily, we've waded through most of it already, really. So, you know, you get the final closing scenes now of, you know, you've got the interesting moment where Mulder and Scully are looking in on Barnett as he's being worked on by the doctors, and you see who seems to be the smoking man, and he's desperately trying to get information from Barnett as where his research is. Yeah. And they describe him as, Mulder says, oh, that guy there in the suit's probably CIA. Now, there's an interesting thing here, that when they wrote this, when they were writing these episodes, the smoking man wasn't really the smoking man by this point. They hadn't really figured that out yet. So the guy, when Scully obviously sees him in the pilot, she walks past him, he's in the office when she gets the assignment, the X-Files. So you could say, well, why doesn't she recognise him? You know, when she, because it's the same guy. It seems to be the same guy. But I don't think the inference was that it was supposed to be the same man. I think at that point, Smokey Man was just a guy they brought in. They got the actor back because they could get him. But you could retroactively tie this into the conspiracy, couldn't you? Because if Deep Throat was there and Deep Throat knew about all this and was trying to get his buddies were trying to get the research, you could quite easily say that that's the Smokey Man.
Oh yeah, you could connect the dots quite easily. Yeah. Then once you've got Deep Throat in the bar explaining everything, you could easily connect them to Smoking Man and the ongoing mythology.
Yeah. And, you know, there are points where the government and the syndicate, you know, can be tracked as not just interested in alien stuff, but there's episodes where they are interested in other things like weird science or, you know, like Soft Light in season two comes to mind, where X is, you know, getting that for them, basically. So there's times when you've got the syndicate, or you can retroactively kind of say that it's the syndicate who are trying to get all this stuff as part of the bigger picture. So, but that's just, that's fan connecting.
Yeah.
It's not how it was meant to be originally. And then, you know, you've got the, as Mulder says, the irony of the research just sitting in a locker somewhere in a train station that could change the world, apparently. And then, but when he says, somehow I feel we haven't heard the last from John Barnett, I thought, well, we have, mate, haven't we?
Yeah. Yeah, the dude's pretty dead. He's died twice now. He's pretty done.
Were they by putting that line in there? Do you think they were trying to suggest that there'd be a sequel?
Maybe. I think maybe the line was. I would almost guarantee that the line was probably left there from what is an original script again, where it's just a stalker episode.
Yeah.
And maybe two or three episodes down the line, we'd see him come back, and then the story would finish.
Probably. I don't know. Who knows? It could just be one of those open-ended things with the X-Files where they do. It's like, ooh, there's something still out there. But in this case, it's just like, oh, I'm not bothered. You know, I'm glad it's over. I'm glad he's gone.
Yeah,
because sure, because he's just a bit like. I mean, what got me, the point I stopped like thinking if he was anyway scary was but when he rings Mulder a second time and all you hear him, he just goes, ah. I just pissed myself. It reminds me of when Emma Platt, when she's doing podcasts, her little boy always comes in halfway through. And she's like, fuck off, Freddy, I'm doing stuff. It was quite funny. She's like, no, go away. It's so funny. But yeah, just when he's going, oh, I'm just a bit like, oh, just no.
just leave it. Just let it be done with.
Just let it be over. And thankfully it is. That was Young at Heart. Which, yeah, is a pretty duff episode altogether, actually. I think the more I've talked about it with you, the less I like it, actually.
Yeah, I think I feel kind of the same. The more I talk about it, I'm like, actually, I don't even want to give it the benefit of the doubt anymore.
No.
It's such a bad episode.
I'm reducing my score to 4.
And yeah, I think I might do as well.
Yeah, it's going down to a 4. Talking about this has been very cathartic, like Mulder taking his shot, you know, doing all that.
Yeah.
So, now comes the what is in this case a tricky point in the show, because I would normally ask my guest if they believe in a specific paranormality, but I don't know what the fuck to ask you about now.
Do I believe in salamander hands?
That's genuinely what I was going to say. Do you believe, Andrew, do you believe in, do you believe that scientists can use rapid age deceleration to create salamander appendages on humans?
No.
Good. Let's move on.
Okay. Have you heard the sentence you've just said? It's the most ridiculous thing I think I've ever heard.
Because I really don't. I suppose the most you could probably get out of this is, do you believe that science could one day allow aging to be decelerated? I suppose that's the most sensible one. Do you think we'll ever get to a point where we'll be able to either stop aging or we'll be able to decelerate our aging?
I don't think so. I don't think it would be. I don't think even if it was possible, it would be something we'd want to do, because we'd end up with a, you know, 20 or 30 billion people per country because no one's dying.
That's
you
true. Know,
you wouldn't want to do it. The population would be absolutely insane. No, just no.
That's actually an important thing, isn't it? Because people don't think of. You know, when everyone talks about how they'd want to live forever and immortality and what, they don't stop to think, well, hang on, this planet's only so big, right? Yeah. We can't get off it yet. So how would we all live? Eventually, we'd use everything up rapidly. So yeah, it's a good point, that is. That's actually something people don't think of. The actual consequences of not just of the science, but also of how it would affect the Earth. But
I mean, yeah, we're both from pretty big cities. Can you imagine, you know, London or Birmingham 10 years' time if no one has died between now and then?
God. There's already enough homeless people on the streets. We don't need, like, people who have got homes who can't fit in them anymore. It's just like, yeah, it's a frightening thought, really. But I don't really think that science will get to that either. I think there will be, you know, there's been talk about, I think they're called telomones or something like that. There's supposedly science which is looking at the way that our DNA breaks down and how it potentially can be slowed down, and like in certain animals, you know, they like I mean tortoises are a good example of an animal that really age slowly, you know.
Yeah.
You've got tortoises that can live for like 250 years. I think there's one that alive that's like 200 odd years old now, so they've got a really long lifespan. So it's the whole thing of, I think they might get to a point where they can extend a lifespan.
I like the idea of extending quality of life, but you know, I don't want to. I don't care whether I still look like this or not. I don't particularly want to be 250 years old. but you know, I like the idea of maybe, you know, keeping us all more sane. You know, keeping us all more of our faculties right up until the end would be nice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Because that's the other thing, you know, would if you were extended with age, would you just have a really long old age?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, would your average what Alzheimer's starts to kick in 50 to 60 years old, maybe. You know,
I think I'm already there with that, if I'm honest.
Well, I get days where I think I am as well, and I go, oh, I know that guy. And I still can't remember his name 2 hours later.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? You don't want to do that at 50 or 60 and then live to 150.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. That would be shit. But, yeah, it's interesting. I think there'll be some science about that kind of thing. But I don't think decelerating age, Benjamin Button style, is going to happen anytime soon. So I think that's a...
As long as I keep to just sticking it in my face creams, that's all.
Yeah, just really advanced oil of Ulay. Yeah, that'll do. Okay, so now we've got through the slog of the episode. You've got a challenge on your hands now because you are currently the king of the quizzes. You got 6 out of 6 on Lazarus. Do you think you can equal your score? I should say this time around.
I don't think I can. I'm going to try, but I don't think I can. That was definitely a one-off.
Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see. Because I love it now if you actually got the 6. This would be brilliant.
I don't.
Right, are you ready for 5 questions and a quote on Young at Heart?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay. Right. Question one. No pressure here, by the way. Question one. Name the correctional facility the teaser takes place in.
Tashmoor Federal Correctional Facility.
Now, I bet you've remembered that mainly because it's really weird.
Actually, stupidly, I remember it because I wrote it down in my notes and then I had to go back to the beginning of the episode because I realised that my iPad had auto-corrected it to something completely different.
well done. Anyway, Tashmoor. Okay. What does the first note from Barnett to Mulder on the original case say?
Fox can't guard the chicken coop.
Fox can't guard the chicken coop. Very well. Very well done. We did mention that earlier, actually. But yeah, good one. Okay. You're doing well. You're doing well so far. Question 3. What did the scientific community call Dr. Ridley behind his back?
Dr. Mengele.
Dr. Mengele, yes. Who was, of course, the Nazi angel of death. He gets mentioned a few again in the X-Files when they start talking about all the Nazi alien stuff. But yeah, there you go. 3 out of 3. Here we go. Okay. What did Reggie Perdue promise to show Mulder when he'd finished working on it?
A mystery novel that he was writing.
A mystery novel. Yes. Well done. Good one. Okay. 4 out of 4.
Jesus Christ.
You won't get this. Question 5. Scully's friend Kathy on the answer machine asks if she'll see her before what event?
Is it a cello and piano recital?
A cello recital. Yeah, absolutely. Well done. Okay, it's 5 out of 5. So if you get the quote now, you've equaled your score. And I don't think anyone's going to top you. Okay, question 6. Here's the quote. Okay. He holds all the cards.
Oh, bloody hell. No. No, can't. No, not a clue.
Are you sure you're not just not telling me so you don't get 6?
No, I really want to. Now I've got the question's always the bit that kill me, but no, he holds all the cards. No.
Okay. I'll do it in the accent. He holds all the cards. Which is deep throat or an attempt at deep throat. When he's talking to Mulder about Barnett with the research and everything like that. So I'm gutted. 5 out of 6 is still very good, though. Okay, it's still one of the highest scores we've had.
I'm quite happy with that.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, you got all the questions right, so well done. Your research in this paid off for this and Lazarus. So well done, well done. Everyone needs to look at your example now when they come on the X-Cast. So yeah, that was Young at Heart, our 16th episode of The X-Files. Thanks again, Andrew. It's been great to have you come back on for these last 2 episodes. It's been real fun.
It's been really good to be back on. Thank you for having me.
Brilliant. Yeah, you'll be back on before the end of the season. You're doing a couple more.
I think I am, yeah.
I think your next one is Tombs. So
I'm very much looking forward to that one as well.
That will be a good one. So we'll see you again in a couple of weeks. Until then, where can we find you around?
Until then, yeah, you can find me. I do a lot of writing and podcasting for Fail Critics, where they get all of my opinions on films, good and bad. And I spend a lot of my time, maybe an unhealthy amount of my time, on Twitter, at Brooker411, where my opinions on films and everything else gets kind of spouted.
Good spouting, though. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And yeah, it's all, Andrew's stuff is always great. So do check it out, guys. That'd be brilliant.
Well, thank you. I do appreciate it.
No, not at all. No problem. We're obviously on Twitter at @X_cast and on Facebook at @TheXcast. And we're on iTunes, so please do subscribe. And if you could leave us a review, that'd be brilliant as well. Matt Lamborn has still got a season 6 DVD to give away, and nobody's had it yet. So somebody's got to take it off his hands. All you got to do is write us a review. Simple. You don't even have to tell us we're good. Although I'd prefer if you did.
Yeah, they're not quite as flattering when they say, oh, it was a bit boring, a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
No one wants to hear that.
I'm not giving you a freebie for that.
No.
Sorry, guys. But yeah, so that'd be great. And You can find us at www.blackholepodcast.com as part of the Black Hole Media Network, with lots of other podcasts for about film and TV and stuff you can check out. So lots to listen to, and that would be lovely if you did. So yeah, we'll be back next week. Matt Lamborn, mentioning him, he's back for EBE. We're covering a good conspiracy episode of The X-Files, so that should be a good one.
Very good episode as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, she is. So it's that'll be a lot of fun. So until then, thanks again for listening, guys, and always remember the important words: trust no one.